sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guests this morning on Two Jewish are Jamie Ellman and Eli Battalion, co-creators and stars of Yid Life Crisis, the Yiddish language situation comedy YouTube sensation. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. When we get to late June, it's definitely time to start thinking about leaving town and heading outward. And for many children, it's time to go to cooler climes and Jewish camp for 2 weeks or a month or even 2 months. It's hot, really hot now. Last week was insane here in southern Arizona, and this week was worse. And officially, summer is about a week old, and so it must be time for us to play here on Two Jewish, the immortal, eternally entertaining cut from the late great comedian Alan Sherman about kids going off to summer camp. Here it is, our annual tradition on Two Jewish for the last, 13 or 14 years, believe it or not. It's the classic tune, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators, and the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Mudda Fada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay, I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mudda, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball, gee, that's better. Mudda Fada, kindly disregard this letter.
A truly legendary piece of American Jewish music, Alan Sherman's Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. It is, of course, funny and human and appropriate for this time of year, with kids going away to what used to be called sleepaway camp and parents enjoying life again, missing our lovely, sweet children every single day they are gone. The truth is that with the cost of overnight camps these days, what parents may find themselves missing is financial solvency. Having had children at Jewish camps for most of the past 13 years or so, I can tell you that I'm exaggerating only a little bit. It isn't really that expensive. I just sold the family dog to pay for it and will be eating top ramen all summer. But it's worth it. But the truth is, it is worth it. Because when kids attend Jewish camp, they come back with an extraordinary, natural feeling about what it's like to live Jewishly every day, without a thought of protest or criticizing the experience. At camp, being Jewish is completely cool, the way it should seem in everyday life and at synagogue, but often doesn't. If we could introduce all of our children to a total Jewish environment like camp and make it a regular part of their lives, we would make incredible progress towards ensuring the future of the American Jewish community for the next generation and for generations to come. But it's also true that when we are able to replicate that kind of dedicated, embracing Jewish experience for adults, families, and seniors in our Jewish homes and in our temples, we are also beginning to create the kind of future for Judaism that's essential to our continued flourishing in this incredible country. For Judaism was not made to be experienced in tiny bits or only in the synagogue. Judaism, a way of life, as my grandfather, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan, called it in his book of that same title. A way of life, and as a way of life, Judaism is meant to include experiences and insights into every area of human endeavor. When our synagogue holds a temple retreat, or an Israel pilgrimage trip, or an extended study session, or a class like Adult B'nai Mitzvah or Confirmation, we are also, at our Temple Emmanuel, trying to recreate the best aspects of Jewish camp experience for grown-ups. Because it's when we make Judaism a part of every aspect of our lives that we gain the greatest sense of goodness, holiness, meaning, and peace. So, send your kids or grandchildren to Jewish camp and help other people do it too, but take some time to include Jewish rituals, study, prayer, and play in your own life every day. If you do that, the rest of the year will be just as much fun as summer camp and just as enjoyable for Jewish adults as well as Jewish kids. Our guests this morning on Too Jewish are lots of fun. Jamie Ellman and Ellie Battalion are the very funny and creative co-creators and stars of Yid Life Crisis, the Yiddish language, I kid you not, situation comedy YouTube hit that has taken the internet by storm, or by virus, I suppose. Hear all about it when we return in a moment on Too Jewish. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Ellie Battalion and Jamie Ellman are the creators of the remarkable Yid Life Crisis, one of the funniest things you will ever see on YouTube, especially if you understand Yiddish, but not exclusively so, in which they, well, highlight a variety of Jewish and human issues on a regular basis. It's become kind of a surprise sensation on the internet. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you?
What's up? Good morning. So most of us heard of you for the first time when you snagged a big star to join you on a double blind date. Can you explain how that all happened?
Well, if we could explain it ourselves, I mean, we could tell you what happened, but it still doesn't explain how we managed to snag Mayim Bialik.
By the way, a past guest of Too Jewish, I have to add that. And she also came to Shul at my synagogue once when she was visiting Tucson, so that's my claim to fame. But go ahead, let's hear your Mayim Bialik story.
Oh, good, good. And I was going to say, please don't ask her about us, ever. No, she was a real, speaking of Yiddish, it was a Machiah to work with her. We knew that she knew about the show because we sort of have some friends in common, and she tweeted about us early on, and we knew from actually before that that we'd love to work with her. And we actually did a show at El Cid in L.A. where a friend of hers wrote up an article on our live show in L.A., and she retweeted that. And then we were like on a full-blown mission to lock her down. And so when we heard last summer that she was coming to Montreal to speak at a campaign launch event here in Montreal, we somehow set up that we would meet her at her hotel and try and talk her into doing an episode. All that took was kosher, gluten-free bagels.
Which are so easy to find.
Well, it's Montreal, so if they're going to be anywhere, we're going to find
them. That's where you're going to find them.
And we pitched her on an idea that we had to do something like what you saw, and she said yes right away, and a couple months later we flew to L.A. and shot it with her, and it was a blast.
It's very funny and very entertaining, and everything is subtitled. So if you don't know Yiddish, you get the flavor of it even without knowing Yiddish. How did you decide to do a Yiddish focused YouTube show?
Well, the interesting thing about us, or maybe not that interesting thing, is we were from Montreal, and we went to a high school that actually taught the Yiddish language. So it's quite a rarity, and I think ever since we went there, not only did they stop teaching it, but what other places were in the world that taught it as well, like all two other places. But we had learned it, and the Jewish community in Montreal has some residues, or I should say residues, of Yiddish in it through our Yiddish theater and our Jewish public library, which has a lot of Yiddish archives and material. So it's something that's sort of in the water here in Montreal. And so we felt like there was an opportunity to do something in Yiddish, which we fundamentally believe is a comedy-conducive language, and which we think really informs the styles of Seinfeld and David, for example, even though they don't speak Yiddish, they're sort of acting out in Yiddish. We felt like there was a chance to take something that's really old and really part of our heritage, but apply it in pretty much the most modern way, which is on YouTube for a YouTube generation. And so that was basically the idea. How do we take the flavor of the old school Yiddish comedy and vaudeville that we so enjoy, but put it in a modern format that speaks to our generation?
It's terrifically fun, and we will talk much more with Ellie Battalion and Jamie Ellman of Yid Life Crisis when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So your product is kosher?
Yes. The base ingredients, the propylene glycol vegetable glycerin, are both certified kosher, USP grade. It's basically the same product that's put in asthma inhalers.
Where do you get your flavorings from?
Our flavorings come from Flavor Art in Italy. It is definitely the finest flavorings in the world.
And people have a variety of choices.
Yes, they do. We've got over 500 flavors.
Now, the quality of what you provide is very important.
Yes, it is. When people come in, we first find out what kind of cigarettes they've been using, so we know the approximate level of nicotine they'll need. Then we fit them with a flavor that would be perfect for them.
How can people find out more? Where can they go?
They can do one of a couple of things. They can visit us on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com. That's all one word. Or call us on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
A pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream us from there or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We have a little over 4 months until we elect a new president of these United States, and so we continue with our 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report. The very different directions the Republican and Democratic platform committees are headed for on Israel was highlighted last week. A Jewish Political Action Committee, the PAC, called Iron Dome Alliance, is seeking to get the Republican Party platform to recognize the West Bank as an indigenous part of the Jewish homeland. Not sure what that means. The land of Israel is the indigenous homeland of the Jewish people by right and by law, and we oppose any measures to force, coerce, or otherwise impose a security solution or artificial borders on the Jewish state, said the language proposed by this Iron Dome alliance. We recognize an undivided Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and Judea and Samaria as integral parts of the indigenous Jewish homeland. Well, Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, generally refers to the state of Israel and the territories it has. Judea and Samaria are the biblical names used in Israel to designate the West Bank, at least on the right. That's an area where Israel has expanded Jewish settlement over the decades, but which it has never formally annexed. Israel has annexed Jerusalem, and unlike the West Bank, it has extended some rights conferred on Israelis to the Palestinian residents of East Jerusalem. The Iron Dome Alliance released this language June 16th, offering it for incorporation into both major parties' platforms. Its chairman, Jeff Balaban, said, however, that its emphasis will be on the Republican Party because the Republican Party is more attuned to conservative pro-Israel positions, and in part because the presumptive presidential nominee, Donald Trump, is quite an iconoclast. Someone who likes to succeed won't agree to go down the road of something that has failed and failed again and again, said Balaban, a longtime Republican activist in the Orthodox community. The idea of taking a new look at this is very important. The Republican Party currently favors a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, albeit in terms like those in the current Democratic Party platform that frame it as key to Israel's security and well-being. The Democratic Party's platform drafting committee is grappling with proposals backed by appointees named by Senator Bernie Sanders to make the language more sympathetic to Palestinian concerns, not less. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about the things that create identity in groups. What makes you feel like you're part of something? You mentioned a friend of yours who works for Rotary International, and I told you a dark secret from my past, not a dark, a nice secret. I was in Rotary Club for a long time. And there are all of these different kinds of associations that used to be so typical of Americans, Rotary Club and Kiwanis and the Elks and the Shriners, and most of those are
Lions.
Sort of the Lions, right? Most of these are sort of aging out of existence. Rotary seems to still be fairly strong, but it's not young anymore. Those kinds of associations go back to Alexis de Tocqueville traveling around America and being stunned by how Americans always wanted to seem to congregate in groups to do stuff. But it's not just Americans. It's all human beings, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, it seems to be a universal need to affiliate, be part of a team or a subgroup or a subtribe or a clan or something like that. And, you know, I think there's like two psychological forces at work. One is the need for affiliation. One is the need for attachment. You know, there's attachment theory, like kids get attached to parents and adults get attached to spouses or groups or peers. And people seem to have a need for attachment and a need for affiliation. And sometimes those two can overlap greatly. But it can also be dangerous because it creates a sense of us versus them. You know, we the good guys, them the bad guys. And it can lead to exclusionary behavior, hurtful behavior, even violent behavior. So, I mean, I think the fact of affiliation is universal and probably timeless, but the forms it takes can be either constructive or destructive, and sometimes both at the same time.
You know, I think it goes back to the first human groups were really clans, and then they were maybe tribes, and those tribes had an identity, and some of the identity was we're not them, we're better than them, we're different from them. Judaism is, in some ways, a very large tribe. We joke about that. We say somebody's an MOT, a member of the tribe.
Right.
as though there were some ethnic connection, and really, not so much. But there's definitely a sense that some of the things that we do as Jews are there, in halacha even, to set us apart, to make us a different people.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely, and you know, you're a greater expert on this than I am by far, but I think definitely a lot of the oldest laws in Judaism that seem so inexplicable to non-Jews, and to many Jews, in fact, today, were there to create a sense of identity, a sense of we belong to this team and not that team. So it was the ancient equivalent of a baseball cap and a t-shirt, kind of a uniform. But, you know, like some of the dietary laws, the Chutney's rules.
The Chutney's rules really about not mixing wool and linen, you know, it's really inexplicable kind of law.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of things.
As though kashrut was perfectly logical,
right,
of course.
I mean, you try to explain to non-Jews why wine can be kosher or not kosher in today's world, and it's pretty lame.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, the only thing you can say to justify it is this was designed to create a sense of community, a sense of nationhood and identity as Jews moved from Egypt into the Promised Land. It was designed to set up barriers and create differences. And difference in Hebrew is the same as holiness.
Kodesh comes from separating out, separating right. something out. Thanks, Tom. I think we'll continue on this next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi non-Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
You know, gay rights have been very much in the news for a long time in America, coming to the fore with, first of all, the marriage equality, and then the awful massacre in Orlando, Florida. 2 out of 3 years, when I led trips to Israel, we happened to be in Tel Aviv for the Gay Pride Parade, one of the biggest in the world, one of the most popular. Tel Aviv is considered one of the most gay-friendly cities in the world. Israel has had an interesting and, I think, complex relationship to gay rights. Let's talk about the Israeli thoughts about gay rights.
Definitely. I don't know if you would be surprised.
And of course, I mean gay, lesbian, transsexual, and so forth.
I'm sure you won't be surprised, but I don't know if your audience knows that Israel is one of the countries that have a lot of legislation
protecting
LGBT, although because of the Rabbanut in Israel, like they cannot get married in Israel, like, you know, as a
Kedat Moshe v'Israel. Well, there's no civil ceremonies in Israel, and they won't allow religious ceremonies.
Their marriage, if they will go...
It's recognized. They go to Cyprus and get married.
They go to Cyprus, and their marriage recognized.
Right.
And, you know, I'm trying to think, like, all the new, at least the past 5 years, there is every year new legislation that support and protect, you know, LGBT population rights in Israel. And even at the IDF, I just had a talk a few days ago with one of the summer shlichim that's here, and we talked about if a gay or lesbian boy or girl can serve at the army and be officer or combat unit, whatever. And there is zero difference between, like, an LGBT kid who just want to go to the IDF and be almost in every unit in the army. As far as I know, there is no difference. Like, it's really equal rights to be in the IDF as a LGBT. I think it's important.
It's very important. There's no don't ask, don't tell in Israel. They're just accepted as part of the units. Of course, there was a terrible incident at the Jerusalem Gay Pride Parade March last year where the young woman was stabbed to death. Is Jerusalem less gay-friendly?
Yes. It's less gay-friendly than Tel Aviv from a very, I would say, reasonable... The population is different.
Right.
The population in Jerusalem is much more Orthodox.
Much more religious.
Religious, not just Jewish, by the way.
Right, of course.
So they are less open. In Tel Aviv, they are less religious from all religion. And they are much more, you know, open. You know,
it's a different
population.
City.
So that's why you can... But unfortunately, unfortunately, I can see it's happened in Tel Aviv as well.
It can happen anywhere in the world,
of course. Because, you know, radicals have no limits, you know, no borders. They can go, but, yeah.
But it's good to hear about the protections that Israel offers to LGBTQ community. Maybe a good standard for us here in America, too. Thanks so much, Ashran.
Toda Rabbi.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Good morning, John.
Boker Tov.
Boker Or. We've been talking about the experience of Israel, led the 8th grade trip from THA there. What are the educational values that emerge from that experience? Mm-hmm. How do you learn?
Sure.
What's purpose, really?
Well, it's one of those things that's deep and wide. And when we were there, we saw lots of different kinds of groups. So the educational value, I think, is relevant to a wide span of ages. There were classes there as young as sixth grade, and we saw many eighth grade classes. We saw some high school age groups, and we saw a lot of young adults on Taglit, on Birthright. And there were also lots of adult groups that went of different faiths. And so, you know, of course, our lens is looking through how this was a value to the eighth graders. And the majority of the kids who went had been through, you know, an intensive Jewish day school experience from kindergarten all the way up. And so they had a depth of knowledge that is powerful when you come to a new experience. Visiting Israel was new. Knowing about Israel was not new. They knew about the wall. They knew about a little bit about Israeli politics. They knew about Israeli culture and food, and of course the traditions and dancing and all these things. But to be there and to do it there was kind of like seeing the flowers blooming on a beautiful tree. You know, the seeds are planted, all this knowledge is instilled, and then to see it coming to life, they were comfortable, even though in a lot of ways they're strangers. There was a familiarity. It's like we were all cousins, and they engaged eagerly and readily. They soaked up these experiences and seeing the doing. You know, we've talked about having hands-on experiences for kids, right? And how important it is to involve them. This is a quintessential example of being involved in your own learning. So to see them making pita bread and walking the snake path on Masada and praying on Masada in the morning and watching the sun coming up over Jordan and the Dead Sea. There was a connection there that already existed, and it just came to life. It blossomed during the trip.
You know, it's something we try to create for all of our kids as Jews, a connection to the land of Israel, knowing that it's the largest Jewish country in the world now, mm-hmm. in terms of population, such a dynamic place, the homeland of our heart forever. But to be able to do that,
yes.
for a group of children, not such young children anymore, adolescents really.
Yeah.
Seeing them begin to form a connection. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to do it. What a powerful experience.
We had one of the students who said, I'm finding myself in Israel. And this is a kiddo who really is working on finding herself. And to hear that, it literally brought tears to me because it moved her in a deep way. But you hit it right. It's the difference of knowing and doing. Knowing a thing is one thing, doing it, entirely different.
Beautiful. Thanks, John. We'll talk next week.
Ta-da.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Harvey and Sheila Goldman are getting ready for bed. Sheila stands in front of her full-length mirror, takes a long, hard look at herself, and says, "You know, Harvey, I stare in this mirror and I see an ancient creature. My face is wrinkled, my arms and legs are flabby as popped balloons. My body looks like a sad, deflated blimp." She turns to face her husband and says, "Honey, please, tell me just one positive thing about my body so I can feel better about myself." Harvey studies Sheila for a moment and says thoughtfully, "Well, there's nothing wrong with your eyesight." Services for the late Harvey Golden will be held at 10:30 a.m. this morning. That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature Too Jewish Just for You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week our portion features drama and tragedy, rebellion and punishment. To recap last week's events, the people of Israel have come to the borders of the Promised Land just 2 years after leaving Egyptian slavery, but a team of spies comes back with a poor report. "We aren't strong enough to conquer the land," they say. Shocked, the Israelites rebel against the leadership of Moses and Aaron. The rebellion fails, and a verdict is proclaimed. A lack of faith in God lies at the heart of the problem, and God decides that this generation can never come into the holy promised land. It will have to live in the Sinai for 38 more years until they are all gone, and a new generation, fresh with the optimism of youth and untainted by slavery and that mentality, can come forward. Stung by this sentence of death in the desert, at the start of this week's portion, a group of rebels under the leadership of a priest, a Levite named Korach, challenges the control of Moses and Aaron. He accuses them of hubris, of overweening pride and egotism. Born into that same tribe, Korach is an insider rebelling against his own kin. "Who are these guys, Moses and Aaron, to take on the authority of ruling over us?" he asks. His rebellion threatens the very foundations of Israelite leadership, for if the God of liberation is not at the heart of this enterprise, if it's all a matter of personal ego and self-aggrandizement, then they might as well go back to Egypt and live in slavery, as some propose now to do once again. But Korach dissembles. He lies, for Moses clearly has had no great desire for this high office. He has held it only as a sacred trust given him by God against his own will at times. Korach threatens God's authority, not Moses. The Torah portion tells us that in order to determine the ongoing leadership of Israel, a great outdoor contest is held, a kind of religious challenge match. The net result is that Korach and his followers are completely destroyed while Moses and Aaron are fully vindicated. It's always nice when God has your back. One lesson of Korach is that before we accuse others of arrogance, we need to look in the mirror. But the even more abiding lesson is that a Judaism that doesn't base itself in humility and reverence for God, which is focused solely on personal aggrandizement, will fail. Only through faith and devotion will we reach our own promised land. When we come back on Too Jewish, our young guests, Jamie Ellman and Ellie Battalion, will explain why in the world they decided it was time to create a Yiddish language YouTube feature called Yid Life Crisis, and how it has become an internet sensation, and how they got Mayim Bialik to appear on it. Find out when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A second state in India has granted minority status to the country's Jews. Last week, the state cabinet of Maharashtra approved the proposal to make the Jewish community a notified minority. About 5,000 Jews live in India, half in the state of Maharashtra, home to the capital of Mumbai. India has six other official minority communities: Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, Sikhs, Parsis, and Jains. Official recognition makes it easier for Jews to register marriages and deaths, establish educational institutions and receive benefits like scholarships and development funds, it'll also make it easier to practice and promote Jewish culture. The Jewish community submitted an application for recognition to the country's Minority Affairs Ministry back in April. We formally decided to grant the Jews minority status. They will be eligible for all benefits given to notified minorities, the principal secretary of the Minority Department, Jayashree Mukherjee, said. Achieving the status in Maharashtra lays the groundwork for bestowing similar status on Jewish communities all across India. West Bengal, an Indian state with a Jewish population of under 50 people, approved minority status to the community about a decade ago. In a country of 1.2 billion people, the 5,000 Jews permanently living in India definitely represent a minority. On TV, Rabbi Hanoch Hecht took second place on the popular Food Network cable TV show Chopped. In an episode that aired last week titled Leap of Faith, the Chabad rabbi competed alongside a priest, a pastor, and a nun. Hecht grew up in Brooklyn as one of 10 kids and managed to stay in his mother's good graces by helping in the kitchen. On the show, the clerics were tasked with preparing an appetizer, entree, and dessert using secret basket ingredients revealed at the start of each round, timed in 20, 30, and 30-minute increments. The experience was phenomenal, Rabbi Hecht said. The producers were very accommodating and sensitive to my needs and requirements. Those kashrut requirements were part of the agreement for the rabbi's participation on the show, which found him due to his role as a guest lecturer at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York, near where he is based. On Chopped, Rabbi Hecht was under a bit of a handicap. The kitchens on the show are not kosher, and he couldn't taste his own cooking. To compensate, Hecht asked the pastor to sample the condiment levels in his dishes for him. Wonderful example of interfaith partnership and a fun show. Hecht is believed to be the very first Orthodox rabbi to appear on a food show competition in the United States, and it was Chopped. Thanks to devoted two Jewish listeners, Patrick and Victoria Lawson, we have an update on a story we started covering last week. The famous Led Zeppelin guitar riff on Stairway to Heaven was apparently taught to lead guitarist Jimmy Page by a then 17-year-old Jewish kid named Randy Wolf, whose band Spirit was the headliner that this new British band Led Zeppelin was opening for in 1968 tour. Or so we reported last week when we noted that a copyright lawsuit was filed in L.A. and that Robert Plant and Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin had been called to testify. But CBS Evening News found the riff you just heard in a piece by Giovanni Battista Granata, a 17th century Italian composer, and it's pretty similar to Stairway to Heaven, too. Maybe Randy Wolf, whose stage name was Randy California, given him by Jimi Hendrix, took his intro to Taurus, the song that became the direct source for Stairway to Heaven, from an Italian Baroque composer first. Here's a bit of Taurus. Well, the court made its decision last week. Led Zeppelin did not, at least officially, steal a riff from a Jewish guitarist. And there will be no Stairway to Royalties, just a Stairway to Nowhere. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guests this morning, Jamie Ellman and Ellie Battalion, who have a highly entertaining show on YouTube called Yid Life Crisis. You can also access it through their website, which is yidlifecrisis.com. You know, Yiddish is such an evocative language, and maybe really, as you said earlier in the show, because of growing up in Montreal, which has not only salt beef, but a Yiddish heritage as well. You bring out something that feels somehow when we're watching you, young guys doing what looks like modern comedy, it feels like it's not in Yiddish somehow. I don't know how else to describe it. And yet it's instantly referable.
Well, first of all, with all due respect, Rabbi, it's smoked meat. okay?
I'm sorry, did I say salt beef?
That's a British thing, which is funny that you mentioned that, because we've been talking about salt beef. Right now we're cutting our three-part documentary on our visit to London back in December, which is part of our global shtetl series, where we go into various Jewish communities around the world and explore the culture and the food and the history of the neighborhood. We did London, we did New York, five parts in Tel Aviv. Krakow is coming up, and we're actually shooting in Toronto next week. But you could see us talking about salt beef, but please refer to the Montreal meat as smoked meat.
Thank you.
Okay,
I appreciate
just remember what you did at Yom Kippur, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to play it on that thick, but
I'm sorry that I sinned before you over smoked meat.
I'm beating my chest for you right now.
Thank you. That's good. You can soften the rye bread that way, too, if you put the rye bread in as a kind of a cook. Go ahead, anyway.
Well, like Ellie was saying, you know, we feel that Yiddish contains the whole history of Ashkenazic Judaism, and it's a very colorful language, and we feel that we are descendants, comedically, of a lot of great Jewish comics that we look up to, that were influenced by Yiddish, whether, you know, they know it or not, whether directly or indirectly, you know, from the Jon Stewart to the Woody Allens and the Larry Davids and the Mel Brookses. And in fact, I'm actually speaking to you right now from the Siegel Center Theater in Montreal, where they're putting on the producers, Mel Brooks, the producers, in Yiddish coming up this month. So we're sort of steeped in it. But we wanted, specifically, we talked about being able to do the dialogue in Yiddish, and even though people are reading subtitles, for it to really feel like any modern comedy, like a scene from Seinfeld or something. And so we wanted to sort of express that Yiddish is an old language and is not spoken very much in the world today, but we wanted to be part of this movement, which we've seen now in New York and Tel Aviv and around the world, actually, of younger people who are trying to reinvigorate it a little bit and use it in more modern ways and in secular ways, since most of the Yiddish speakers in the world today are the ultra-Orthodox.
You know, it's fascinating. You do something really clever. You have some of that cultural conflict that always existed in the Yiddish-speaking world between the secular, more assimilated Jew, more modern Jew, and the more religious one. And are these characters you guys play, or are they you?
It's interesting. You could say they're exaggerated versions of us, but I think in reality, neither of us is extraordinarily practicing or ultra-Orthodox about anything other than bagels.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not really us, but yes.
But bagels are a reason to be holy. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, they have a hole.
Yes, exactly.
Of course they are.
Of course.
But we're very interested in this divide between religious Judaism and secular Judaism and cultural Judaism. It's a big part of what we do. And a part of the subtext behind the project is to show people that actually Yiddish, which is a language that's about 80% German, comes from Eastern Europe. And in fact, a lot of our Jewish culture does come, or Ashkenazic culture does indeed come from Eastern Europe as well. And there's a history there of not just having Hasidism, but also having an anarchist movement, for example. A lot of the ideas behind, let's say, socialism and communism came out of Eastern Europe, and the Jews of that space that were speaking Yiddish, and all of this happened in Yiddish. And now if you're an alien that comes down to Earth and you hear Yiddish, you would only think that it's associated with the Hasidic community. So part of our project is also sort of showing that Yiddish is actually a multicultural language that speaks to more than just a religious community, but actually existed and was the language in which many people behind movements such as socialism and communism were speaking at that time. So this is, because of assimilation, you don't normally associate that with secular Judaism, but in fact there was a lot of it. So that's, let's say, about 7% of why we do this project.
We'll get to the 93%. I'm going to throw a little bit more, research-oriented aspect. You know, it feels to me like this show is a cross between Shalom Aleichem and Seinfeld. Do you see it as kind of something more contemporary, or also filling in that sort of linkage across the generations?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you've just compared us to two of our heroes, and we're not worthy. But
well, that's probably true, but that's okay. Keep going.
Yeah, no, that is true. Thank you. That's true, though. It's true that we're not worthy, but nice of you to say. Yeah, we struggle, which we think a lot of people in our generation do, with that generational divide, and how we're going to preserve the culture of our grandparents and our ancestors in the 21st century, and in a Jewish world where, you know, intermarriage is an ever increasing reality, and where we have more freedom of religion and therefore freedom to not practice it than ever before. And so, yes, the crisis is us coming to terms with the Judaism and the cultural Jewishness that is very much part of our DNA, and a rejection of the dogma and the theology and the religiosity that our ancestors lived with. And so, yes, we are proud of sort of bridging the generations, and we love when we do our live shows that we've heard many times over the last couple of years that there are grandkids there who schlep their grandparents with them, and there are grandparents who schlep their grandkids, and we think it's pretty interesting. Yeah, we believe in let's all be miserable together.
That's the Jewish, that should actually be one of the Ten Commandments, I think. It's certainly one of the 613, I don't know which number, but in there for sure.
If you don't know, we don't know.
Yeah,
well, that's okay. There's so much I don't know. Could this work not only on YouTube, but could it work on TV, on, you know, like a regular channel?
We absolutely think so and hope so, and are working towards that right now. We feel that it's definitely part of the zeitgeist right now that not only Judaism but religion and culture as a whole is sort of very much at the forefront of a lot of TV and web content that is sort of high-end, like the Netflixes and the Hulus and stuff like that. And you have shows like on Amazon, like Transparent, that we love, that really is an amazing portrait of modern Jewish culture in L.A. And there are shows like Aziz Ansari's show, Master of None. And we think that we've come to realize that we sort of stumbled into a conversation which is happening not only in the Jewish community, but in a lot of ethnic communities, and we feel it is definitely TV worthy, and we want to maintain the Yiddish as much as possible. But to us, the show was always the Yiddish was a window into like our lens on the world, as we say, a Jewish lens on the world. But we've always felt that the themes of the show are extremely universal, and we like to believe that non-Jews who watch the show, you know, like it and get it, and it resonates with them as much as Jews in a lot of ways. We've actually been really pleased to get fan feedback via email or in person at our live shows that they totally get it. So, yeah, we do want to expand it and grow the show, and stay tuned for that happening, hopefully, soon. Bezras Hashem.
Bezras Hashem. Bezras Hashem. Do you have a... Has anybody objected to it?
Including our parents?
Yeah, that was the next question. You put them together?
Yeah, they're lukewarm on it. Actually, my father was in one of the episodes. Still hates it, though. Interestingly, so we thought originally that there could be backlash from more religious people because there are a few moments that are a little bit sacrilegious, like eating poutine on Yom Kippur, which is, I think, how we start the series about 20 seconds in.
Right.
But in fact, the largest opprobrium that we have received for this is from Yiddish academics who didn't like our Yiddish.
That's so typical. That's just so, that's too Jewish.
Too Jewish, right? So, anyways, we've improved on our Yiddish with the help of other people over time, but the reality is no two Jews can agree on anything, and so everyone's Yiddish is better than everyone else's. Some people thought in the Mind Bialik episode that her Yiddish was better than ours, and between us that there's differences in our Yiddish and that their Yiddish is better, and we're talking German. So it's very Jewish. It's a very, very Jewish thing. But amazingly, actually, from the religious community, There was only one email that came in from someone that said that we probably shouldn't show this, and it ended in a Gemar Chatima Tova. From that point onwards, what we've heard is that there are religious people that really enjoy the show, including someone that yelled out from a minivan, Lasmach the Yid, recently as I was crossing the street, and he was a super fan. But they're into the show. I think the YouTube generation offers the opportunity for the private consumption of this material in a way that people in the religious community can view this. I mean, in a way, look, Jamie, I guess it's basically Yiddish pornography is what we can call it, because in a way they're consuming it privately and enjoying it, and no one's really actually complaining about it. And it makes us think that maybe they all really like it, but they just can't publicly admit that.
Well, I think you just gave them a hand by using the term Yiddish pornography on this podcast.
That's only aired throughout Arizona, you know, and on the web, and it'll be on, you know, iTunes. So nobody will hear it, I'm sure.
We're expecting hate mail from just that last quote.
Thanks. Okay, well,
from
you
from the pornography community. How dare we associate with them? That's our vulgar garbage.
Yeah, I don't even... I think I'm not going to go there. I don't think I want to touch... Well, never mind.
So to speak.
Yeah, so to speak, exactly. In scripting these, like, how do you get the ideas for what your next show is going to be?
A lot of it is really drawn from our personal experiences, conversations that we've had with between ourselves and amongst our friends that can't help but point out various hypocrisies that we like to pick on. And, I mean, if we, you know, we went to a friend of ours' grandmother's funeral a few months ago, and, I mean, I hate to say, I mean, she lived a long and wonderful life, so it wasn't too tragic, but we were giggling through the whole thing because we realized, I'm sorry, no, it's true, because, you know, there are these rituals in Judaism that just beg for satire. You know, when we approached doing a circumcision episode,
you got to cut that out,
so to speak.
Yeah.
By the way, do you want to write with us?
Yeah, we can talk after. That's good.
Okay, we like having rabbinic supervision on our script, actually. a lot of the things come from real conversations that we've had, from events that we've gone to, from brises, from knowing people who have converted and hearing some of their stories. Let's face it, the culture is rich with and ripe for being made fun of a little bit. And we think that the more we can do that, the more we can sort of point out the natural hypocrisy in a lot of religion and a lot of culture and bring everybody down with us.
You know, the fun part is you make fun of yourselves too, and you make fun of the hipness of contemporary culture while making fun of, well, kind of everything, which is, after all, that's what's comedy if you can't make fun of yourself.
Yeah, we definitely like to take the pish out of ourselves, so to speak. And that's a large part of it, because we do recognize our own hypocrisies and ways in which we can have certain beliefs and then our rituals are entirely at odds with those beliefs, and that's the case for both of us. And just recognize this is just, you know, part of the hilarity of the human condition. And we truly do believe we just end up leading funny, comic, tragic lives, and that we should mine this for as much material as possible.
I want to thank...
Because we own that material, because it's up.
You don't have to pay royalties. That's the best part of the whole thing.
Exactly.
I want to thank Ellie Battalion and Jamie Ellman for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish. The show is called Yid Life Crisis. It's Yid Life Crisis, Y-I-D-L-I-F-E, crisis.com. And I'm going to ask you one last question. If there's anybody you could work with, you've already figured out how to make this a great travel experience. If there's one person that each of you could work with, who would it be?
I'm going to say you.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, we've mentioned a few of our heroes here, but I don't know. Mel Brooks is high on our list right now. If you have any info, please let us know.
You know, I had some with Gene Wilder, but if I had ends with Mel Brooks, I'm sorry, I'd get him on my show first.
Okay, fine. In that case, let me just throw in, like,
we'll take Wilder.
Wilder's good.
I'd like to swap it out for Bar Raffaelli in that case.
Oh, yeah. By the way, her Funny or Die show is really a killer. I want to thank you again. And again, the website is yidlifecrisis.com. Thanks so much, guys. Ashenem dank.
A groysen dank.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Hillary Kenner of J-Screen Genetic Testing, which provides an incredible genetic testing service that all Jews and those who are marrying or descended from Jews should take advantage of. Our playout this morning comes from an Israeli duo, the Karakuli sisters, Chayot Karakuli, and their hit song Kan V'Achshav, Here and Now. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. מרחוק השמש עולה, מרגיעה באור משלה, מסביב חולות מזהב, כמו... Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.